This episode of the Citadel Cafe is brought to you by listeners like you. Visit patreon.com/thecitadelcafe to find out how you can become a patron and help make this show possible. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 374 for Wednesday, September 16th, 2020. My name is Joel Duggan, and the Citadel Cafe is where my friends and I hang out to talk about the geeky stuff that we are into. Joining me this week is Brockett Vola. You can find him at TheCatVolver on all the social media that matters. Welcome back, my friend. How are you?
I'm trying to keep a straight face, but every time my first thought is like, the listener is like, oh God, he's back. Like, it's the same thing. And as I look through the show notes, and God bless, all I could think is like, people are being like, well, I don't know what's going to be this time with Brockett. Is it going to be superheroes, or is it going to be Star Wars with Joel again? And like, as I look through the notes, I'm like, I literally remember last time I was on the show, we had the email about our favorite movies. And so we went in depth about a couple of the things that we're going to talk about. And I'm like, man, somebody must just be like, Brock is just like clean up. Like, he just shows up and it's just like Joel is just like emptying out the rest of the same piles, just brushing them off. It used to be weather talk. We used to like obliterate the poor listeners with weather discussions. And now I just obliterate the poor listeners with Avengers and superhero talk.
Hey, you know, if it's what you're into and it's good, then I think it's worth sharing. And it could be worse. I mean, instead of, you know, weather and occasional geography, it could be politics, which we won't dive into.
Yeah, well, that's true.
You know,
yeah.
Because I feel like there's just starting to be that saturation, as often happens whenever there's a U.S. election. And just social media for me now is just kind of like, oh my gosh, I understand it's important, but I would like to read something else today. You know,
yeah,
all the people that I follow on social media. But yeah, I don't think it's going to get better over the next 50 or 60 days.
Absolutely not.
However, I've mentioned this on the show before, and I will point people towards it. There's a more for my Canadian listeners, but there's a show called Party Lines. It's a CBC podcast. It's a political podcast, usually following Parliament here in Canada. And it's a short, like 30-minute show once a week on Thursdays. And they do a really good job. And it's also, no offense to anybody that really likes a lot of CBC podcasts, but I don't. It is a CBC podcast that does not make you roll your eyes and go, oh gosh, it's another CBC podcast. Really meta way of looking at it is that the ads in Party Lines are for other CBC podcasts, and I skip the ads immediately because I can't stand them. It's like the soft, dramatic read radio voice. Do you know what I mean? Like, I like, welcome to CBC podcasts. And it's like, no. It's like nails on a chalkboard.
Yeah.
The two hosts of Party Lines are fantastic and high energy and talk about important things, but with clarity, sense of humor, and like real communication. And I appreciate it. And I bring it up because they've started a new branch. This fall, they're going to be covering the U.S. election from a Canadian perspective. So I'm curious to see how that's going to go too.
Oh boy.
Yeah. I mean, I like to recommend podcasts when I can on the Citadel Cafe, and I've been enjoying Party Line. So if any of my Canadian listeners, or I guess U.S. listeners that want to know what Canada thinks, you can always tune in to that as well. I've linked it on the show before, I think too.
Nice. CB. So I'm just ignorant. I was trying to dance around, but it's ignorance. So in America, we have ABC, American Broadcasting Channel. We've got NBC, National Broadcasting Channel, CBS, Central Broadcasting Station, and Fox Network, which is no acronym, just a billionaire who put his name on it. And I know BBC is the British Broadcasting Channel. And so CBC is the Canadian Broadcasting Channel. Is it just, I'm ignorant, do you guys have multiple national broadcasting channels, or is it mostly just the one and then locals, or what?
So there would be CBC, and CBC would have both national and local branches. So like, you could listen to and watch CBC Halifax, or you could listen to and watch CBC National News, that sort of thing.
Right. Yeah.
But and there would be one for like BC and Manitoba, and like they each province would have their own thing. But in as far as broadcasting stations, there's Global. There was ASN. It's no longer ASN. I think that Global might have taken it over. There was a number of like basic channels that you could get, but there's not many, not nearly as many in the States. But CBC, wow. Global, and for us here locally in the Maritimes, it's ATV, Atlantic Television, but that would cover like New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, PEI, and Newfoundland.
Okay.
And so that channel would be, it would carry the same sort of thing. So basically like, you know, say, I'm not sure what it is, but say like, you know, CBS is like, I don't know, Channel 5, whatever that happens to be on your television. If you were in different states and you were watching Channel 5, it would probably always be CBS or whatever. Whereas in Canada, you'd be watching something on ATV, Channel 9, and it would be carrying the same broadcast that a different station in Ontario would be carrying and a different station in British Columbia would be carrying, but they would all be carrying the same content. So it's like national content, but it's all branded locally. So like on ATV, we'd get local commercials as opposed to the other commercials. So yeah, I'm not sure. It's been so long. I mean, I think it's been 15 years since I've had cable. I haven't watched cable television in a long time. I know because I get really irritated when I go over to families for dinner and they've got the television on and there's commercials every 5 seconds and it drives me nuts.
Yeah.
I can't deal.
Yeah. And so in the United States, it's similar. Basically, you have the you have national broadcasting networks, essentially. Mm-hmm. And so CBS might be CBS. I believe it's like 3 or 2 in Chicago, but back in Tallahassee, Florida, where I grew up, it was like, I think it was like channel 16. So the channel changes depending on it, but it's non-cable. So it used to be antenna. Now it's all digital. You just have to get a digital antenna. So Laura and I don't pay for cable, but we put a digital antenna and both of our TVs so that if we just turn through the generic stations, we have access to anything that's broadcast. So there's a few broadcasting things locally. WGN actually is national, but that's Chicago based. And then of course you've got your ABC, CBS, NBC, and Fox, which generally generate most of their national content out of a New York or LA office, depending on what it is. And then those are all carried locally on whatever the local channel sets are or whatever. But you have the opportunity, quote unquote, to sort of pick your news. So like at night in the States, ABC Nightly News with, forget his first name, Jesus, I've just murdered his whole entire name. Basically, like in the old days, it was Dan Rather who might anchor the ABC news. And at the same time, there might be somebody else on a different station. So technically, you're getting national news, but you're getting it from ABC versus NBC, who might have, you know, other coverage or the same coverage, but with different views or whatever. So, so are you saying like CBC, like let's say, I don't know, or whatever, like an alien lands in Manitoba. Obviously, all of Canada wants to know about this alien. So CBC is going to be the one national carrier that's going to cover it for everybody. And that's just going to be on different people's channels. Or do you have an opportunity to look at something other than CBC to watch the alien coverage?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, CBC is Canadian content, right? So You could watch it on CBC if that's where they're covering it. If something big like that happened, then all the news stations would be covering it. You'd be watching it on Global. You could watch it on CBC. You can watch it. It would be covered on whatever news you're watching. And Global will have like, they'll have like a 2-hour news hour or an hour long news broadcast with two sections, like half an hour is local to your province or region. And then the other half an hour would be national. Right. So You'd have the same people, like there'd be a local team. So like there'd be this, usually it's around here, it's usually a guy and a girl that do like a co-host, co-anchor nightly news, you know, local to Halifax, Nova Scotia, that sort of thing, maybe even the province. And then at you know, say 6:30, it switches over to national things where they would cover more federal government things and stuff like that. Yeah. But the person that would be doing it would still be sitting behind a desk somewhere in, say, like Halifax at the station. So it varies from province to province. From what I remember, of course, I mean, anybody that knows or works or wants to write in and correct me, feel free to correct me. And it would be the same thing with Global or the same thing with like ATV. It would just be a different, you know, different news anchor in the same way that NBC and CBS would differ, you know, for you.
Exactly.
In terms of broadcast content, though, CBC is a lot closer to the BBC, where it's funded by the government, and the CBC content is all Canadian. You don't see any American sitcoms or television shows on CBC, but you would see, and CBC might actually carry British content, but that's just because we're part of the Commonwealth. And like I said, there's that combination. In terms of like Global or ATV, those are the kind of things where you'd get CBS television shows, like say Castle, when Castle was on with Nathan Fillion. Like that would be like an ATV or a Global show. It just depends on who has the licensing in Canada. They all have their online affiliates now too, like, so ATV, or I think, I can't remember whether Global is Crave or what, but Crave is this online app that goes with, you know, the ATV or you know, like the, whatever that channel is. And that's also the channel that has the rights to HBO content. So the HBO content in Canada is paired with Crave. And if you subscribe to Crave, then you get things like, it would have been things like How I Met Your Mother and Big Bang Theory and that kind of a content, all the crime procedurals, CSI, like all that kind of stuff would be part of Crave. If you wanted to watch it on demand, you'd have to pay your $10 a month or whatever. And then to get HBO was 20, but you'd have to start with the base Crave. So it gets really complicated in Canada in terms of American content streaming wise, because it all gets divvied up based on who has the rights to what channel, because in the States you've got Peacock from NBC, you've got HBO Now or Go or whatever it is now, and you've
got Max,
they change the names all the time, and then you've got this other stuff. So unless it's an international corporation like say Apple, where Apple TV, you would get Apple television shows the same way everybody else does through one of the Apple apps, right? So
Disney Plus,
same thing. Like Disney Plus in Canada is just Disney Plus. You just get the app, okay. You know, and you go that way. You know, whereas and Netflix is the same thing. Netflix is just an app. But then when you get into like channel content, so things like Hulu and other things are different, you know, depending on where you are. Because sometimes it doesn't sometimes it doesn't cross the border, because if it's owned by a big conglomerate like Disney or Netflix or Amazon, it's fine. But if it's a network, like if it's a US network, like the WB or like the DC Universe stuff that's going away, that was never available in Canada because it's all, it just never crosses the border, right? So it can become really tricky to try and find streaming content up here. But
it is funny to hear that you had Titans on Netflix, which was DC Universe specific in the States, and interesting to hear some of the other stuff you have. What's funny is you also said the WB, which is the former home of Smallville and other places,
right?
But the WB,
that went away a long time ago.
I was about to say, WB hasn't existed since it and UPN like joined forces to try and create a fifth major network, which never really happened. And that was back even when people cared about watching live TV. But it's the same thing. Everything you're saying makes a lot of sense. It's also incredibly sweet that you feel like your listeners would write in to correct our discussion of these, because you assume that they haven't skipped through this. Like you know, they're just like, and they're still talking about the channels. Okay, great. So that's good times. That sounds very similar exactly to what we have generally. And when we listen to NPR, the National Public Radio, station, which they do have some programs that are kind of like this, mm-hmm. where we are, I'm in a dark studio and I'm looking through the glass at my producer, and my producer says that we have Sharon on the phone and we're going to talk to her about her dogs.
Yep.
You have a little bit of that, but the national ones are much better, but it's still really interesting because with that, as a radio thing, they will cite where it's coming from, which is, which as I've gotten older and I actually care about listening to talk radio, or I guess like NPR specifically, which is the closest I will say, just politically based, that I feel is the most neutral, and gives you some of the best information in the States. They will say like, and now our show, like 1A from Washington, DC, and then they'll say that affiliate. So even though that affiliate like is getting broadcast nationally, that's all being recorded in DC at their local station, and that station's show got popular enough to go national. Same way, like in Chicago, we record a popular show called Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, which is the NPR news quiz. Anyway, that's recorded in downtown Chicago. And then we also, This American Life is also from WBEZ. Also two very popular ones. Those are national, but they're recorded here for the most part, but of course they get so popular that they kind of travel around the States. But their base station for radio is WBEZ. So that's always interesting as we head towards a more digital age, how a lot of these, I was going to say brick and mortar, but they're more wire and mortar type of, you know, broadcasting, whether it's, you know, TV and radio. Like, people have talked about the death of newspapers. Well, I don't think people have really estimated how much the death of like live anything is going to be at some points, especially since like now, if you watch anything quote unquote live through Facebook, if you think about it, you think it's live, but Facebook really has control over where that content's being seen. So it might say live, but you really don't know for sure if it is live, and it could be live with a delay. So really you're not seeing things live. So yeah. It's always interesting, that sort of stuff to me, to some degree. And I'm sure it is incredibly not interesting to anyone else, but I hope broadcaster Stan, who's one of your hardcore listeners, calls in and calls in. Hi, I'm broadcaster Stan. I have problems with the way you talked about the BBC. Emails in and it's like, by the way, you guys are wrong about most of these affiliates. But
yeah, anyway, oh, could be. I used to be right on top of it because I following a podcast for years called Cord Killers with Tom Merritt and Brian Brushwood, and they would often talk about like the overlap and the changing of what the difference is and was between television, radio, and podcasting and streaming. And they've focused mostly on streaming because most people now know what streaming is. They don't have to explain that to anybody, you know?
Right. Same. Yeah.
And podcasts. I mean, even the average person now knows what a podcast is. Like if I'm at a social gathering, not that that happens these days, but if I'm meeting somebody new and they're like, you know, and I say, well, I'm a professional podcaster as part of my home-based business. And no one kind of goes, huh, what's that? You know, they all get it. They might ask how it works, like how do I orchestrate all of that, but they don't know, they don't have that glazed look on their face like I have no idea what you're talking about. They all know what a podcast is, right?
So yeah,
it's, which is cool. Speaking of Facebook though, there's an event happening later today, as a matter of fact, 10 a.m. Pacific time, probably about 2 hours from now. So if this podcast gets published before then you'll hear about it ahead of time. If not, it's happening right now. And it is the Facebook Connect 2020 event. And you're like, Joel, why are you interested in Facebook Connect? Well, here's the thing. Facebook owns Oculus, and Oculus is probably the leading home VR setup right now. And I've been curious about the Oculus Quest specifically for quite some time, and I've been holding off on buying it, mostly because I just don't have the need. It's more of a want. And I have been wanting to see how the Oculus Link beta program would progress over the last little while. And what that is, Oculus Quest is a standalone VR. So you don't need to put sensors around the room. It has sensors in the headset, and you don't need a computer. It is a computer all in one place on your head. And the fidelity of it is less than an Oculus Rift. The Rift is the plug into the wall. You're tethered. You kind of are stuck. You know, you get a cord that comes out the top of the thing connecting to your computer. And the Quest has been that freestanding version for a while. And most people that I've talked to said, you want a Quest. Yes, the graphics are not as good. Yes, it's got, you know, less games, but the experience is far and above better than being connected to your computer with a cable. The problem is that I'm looking at doing some VR art with the Quest. And to do that, you have to connect via this Link cable. Now, it looks like the Quest 2 may be announced later today. And the Link beta is now looking like it's a Link cable included, or at least advertised to be working with the Quest 2. What that does, it allows you to buy the Quest, use it as a standalone VR device, but when you want to play a harder game, a high fidelity game, you know, like Vikings or some other thing, or do some really complicated art and animation, you can then sit down and plug it into your PC and use your PC to boost the performance, have access to a bunch of different games. So it increases your library, which is really cool. So it gives you both the best of both worlds. Like, you want to sit down and be tethered? Great. You can do that with this cable. If you don't, and you want to stand up and do Beat Saber or whatever it is, then you can do that as well. So the Facebook Connect event is happening today, and there's two things. One, the keynote, which is first up, is I'm interested in any hardware announcements they're going to make, as well as price points and whatnot. But also, Goro Fujita is an artist that I've been following on Instagram for quite some time, and he does almost exclusively VR art and animation. He does some Photoshop painting, but most of it is VR stuff. And he's got a presentation today called VR Storytelling, A Magical New Format. And he's going to be talking about like how he's using VR to do different things. And I've seen some really cool projects that have come across my plate over the last year or two, where you've got comic artists that are drawing these still frames in VR, and then you as a comic, quote unquote, reader are like walking through the panels. So it's like walking through a diorama with like speech balloons that are timed and sound effects. Like, imagine like reading a Batman comic and you're reading the speech balloon over Batman's head, but while you're reading it, you're kind of standing there next to him and you can hear the rain, you know, and you can hear the wind on the top of the gargoyle, you know, on high above the city of Gotham. Like, there's some really neat ideas that they're looking into. And as the fidelity of these devices increases, and the hardware increases, then you're going to get better resolution and better graphics out of these things. So right now, the Quill presentation, which is the art program that I've seen Goro Fujita use, is pretty low resolution. It looks an awful lot like early CG animation. But you can render it and have it look pretty good with lighting, but that's not real time. I'm wondering, with new hardware that might be announced, if new versions of that software will look a lot better and might entice me to kind of like finally take that plunge. Plus, it's always nice when, you know, you're very interested in hardware or new technology, and you can kind of wait until the second version comes out, because they usually iron out a lot of kinks, you know, in terms of things like, you know, I mean, it works, but like, you know, one of the first things that they said in this leaked video that I watched was like, you know, it's more comfortable, it's lighter. So like all these different things that, while not going to break the deal, it's like, well, if it's lighter on my face, then that's going to be more fun and like stuff like that. So I'm curious about the Oculus announcements later. There's been a whole ream of announcements. Everybody's trying to get their products out and have the prices attached to them before the fall, kind of like Christmas prep, because I think the PlayStation announcement is tomorrow. Xbox already announced their stuff, including a all digital version of the new Xbox, which I was surprised.
Yeah,
to hear about that.
Yeah, it makes sense to some degree.
Oh yeah, like, for sure. I mean, I think the thing about the new Xbox, I want to call it, it's the Series
S
or something. I don't know.
Oh, XS. Okay.
I have no idea if both letters. It's a terrible naming convention what they've done, but essentially, because it's got such a small footprint and a small price tag, it's like $299 American or something bananas.
Yep, yeah.
For a casual couch gamer like me, like I put more money and more time into my streaming PC, because that's where I spend most of my time, because it's part of my business. But it, you know, to have, if I was to pick up a new Xbox and have access to these new titles, I probably wouldn't care about having a disc drive and having the biggest best thing. Like $299 for me, that's entry level, and that's fine. If I'm only going to play a couple of titles and I can just download them to the box whenever I want, like that, that to me is probably where I would end up going. I don't think I'm going to get a new set top or not set top, but like a new console
gaming system.
Yeah, because I just can't justify the time for the money in. Plus, I would want a better TV. So, and we'll get into that in a second. But yeah, like it's just one of those things where like it is. Curious though how they seem to now be like, well, there's some casual gamers out there that don't want to spend $700 on a new console. Like they've priced themselves out of a market, you know, over the last few years, and I'm curious to see where that's all going to go. But speaking of video games, actually we have an email this week regarding what I've been doing lately, which has been a lot of modded Minecraft on my Twitch channel. Email comes from Anonymous and it's about modded Minecraft. Hi, Joel, and whoever is fortunate enough to make it onto the show this week. I was listening to a recent episode of the podcast in which you spoke about trying modded Minecraft for the first time. This got me wondering if you considered using the Technic launcher. Though I primarily play the vanilla game now, I would prefer modded gameplay using the aforementioned launcher. While this doesn't always guarantee the best results in terms of gameplay, I find that it does offer more flexibility and makes it much easier to install mods faster. Also, with the right software, it makes it easy to combine mods into bigger and better ones. I personally enjoy playing with the Tekkit mod and the Flans mod, but I'd love to know your thoughts. Keep up the great work, Anonymous. Thanks very much for the great letter and the compliment. I am not going to be deviating too much from the Twitch launcher because that seems to be how most mods and most fabric mods that I'm using go. I don't really have much choice. There is a different Java-based launcher that I could use, but it doesn't seem like it's going to be that reliable. And it seems like you need to know more about what's going on under the hood than less. Both of my mod playthroughs, I've got some mods that I run for my regular Minecraft play, which just helps me with performance. But they're all through Fabric, not Forge. I need to use Fabric in order to balance out the performance because Minecraft is so poorly optimized. And I find that modded Minecraft is even less optimized. So I haven't used the Technic launcher at all. I actually just experienced an issue this morning where the Twitch launcher wouldn't work. My modded Minecraft wouldn't work. I don't know what changed. I didn't do anything. I closed everything and relaunched it and it seemed to work. But it had removed all of my settings. And so I'm not having the best time in the back end regarding modded Minecraft. It's not easy to get it to work. And I find it so interesting that so many players want to play modded and can't, you know, they always bring up modded whenever I'm streaming. And yet when I go to try modded, it's the most glitchy experience that I've had playing Minecraft, which is saying something. And I just don't understand the draw. Like I spent a few hours, I enjoy the gameplay. The in-game stuff that I'm doing has been fun. Interacting and doing new things, smelting different ores and like all that kind of stuff. It's a new tech tree to explore, but yeah, but it doesn't help when I've got everything working the way that I want. I've changed a bunch of settings so that the game is as I like it. And then the next day that I log in, oh yeah, we've just forgot all those settings. That doesn't make me want to play the game. So, so I'm not really on board. I can't see myself being a long-term modded player. I might try different packs from time to time. But I can tell you right now, if I do anything else in modded, my expectations are going to be very, very low. It's going to be like, well, we'll play this until it stops working. And at which point I will more than likely lose interests, you know? So I mentioned on the Spawn Chunks, my podcast about Minecraft on Monday, that one of the things that I have pulled away from all of my time in modded this last week or two has been a better understanding. I've always appreciated it, but a better understanding of what Mojang has to do as a developer when they add something new to Minecraft to not make it overpowered, you know, to not make it break or twist or do unintentional things with the rest of the game, because it's already a pretty complicated game. And I think that, you know, by playing modded and seeing what these people have put into the packs, I think it's been eye-opening to see. Just because someone has a good idea that this is going to be a good thing to add doesn't necessarily mean that it should be in the game. The other thing that I think is missing from the modded community is any kind of standard. Like, anybody can just make these mods and put them out there. Well, I shouldn't say anybody. Anybody that has the knowledge to do so. But there's no gate. Like, there's no, this is a good mod, this is a bad mod, this is written well, this is written poorly. So you kind of don't know. You know, you could be opening up a mod pack. Like, the mod pack that I'm using is called All of Fabric 3, and it's been updated. There's now a new version out for the latest version of Minecraft. And the first thing that I saw on the Discord was that, oh, well, it's crashing certain servers, which is fine because I'm playing single player, but it also breaks existing worlds. It's like, well, you've updated the mod pack, but you're telling me I have to start my world over again? No, thanks. Like, I just got going in this world. Like, I don't want to have to start over. And I feel like that kind of stuff, it makes the entry to modded so high, and you're just constantly restarting. Like, that's not how I want to play the game. So, Anonymous, I haven't given any thought to any of the other mods. I'm only just kind of touching the ones that I have in the pack right now. And using the Twitch launcher, as glitchy as it is, it's kind of like the least of whatever evils are out there. That seems to be the way to go. Well, that's going to be, I guess, it for email this week. I know that I've got some things to talk about in terms of what I've been watching to follow up with last week. But Brockett, I know you've had a chance to play Avengers, and you talked about that, I think, last time you were on the show. You had played the beta release? And yes. So the game's out now, though, right? Like, you've had a chance to actually sit down with it, right?
Yes, I have. last time we talked about the movies a lot, and I started to play the beta, and the beta got me really excited. So I rewatched the last hour of Avengers Endgame on my off time when Emerson was napping, and I have to do most of my extra stuff on my phone while that's happening. And so I've been absorbing a lot of Avengers around playing the game. The marquee here in my discoveries is, of course, the new Avengers game by Square Enix, or Squaresoft if you are... grew up in the 90s with the Final Fantasies and hearing about them a lot. But it's been a long in development, long maligned development period for this game. It finally released, I think, September 4th, I believe. So just at the beginning of this month. So it hasn't been out too long. And so I'm going to try and keep as many details of the game's baseline story or side missions or any of that sort of stuff aside. But they did do a beta test of it, because it's supposed to be, I don't play a ton of online games like Destiny or some of these other ones. Fortunately for me, Borderlands, particularly Borderlands 3, which I love, sort of has stayed away from a lot of the Destiny models of the loot shooter that's all online and has so much more multiplayer elements to it. But this one is basically, I guess, out of the box what they were hoping for, which is generally... you have a campaign or a single player storyline with moments where you can play with your friends, but there are a lot of key moments throughout that story gameplay where you have to play by yourself as one of the characters they provide. And it's listed online as about a 14 hour experience. And I'd say that's probably about right. And for the most part, you're kind of introduced to what this world of the Avengers is. It was long in development, as I said, so the character models are all sort of more generic. Nobody looks like Chris Evans, nobody looks like Robert Downey Jr. They are very much looking like characters from the comics, which is, I think, one of the bigger problems I have currently, I guess, with generally Marvel stuff, is the Marvel films have been so popular. I think everybody wants stuff to look and sound like that. But as I get into some of the other Avengers types of stuff that I've absorbed, just like I love Superman, I don't want every Superman to be Christopher Reeve. In fact, like, I really like Frank Quitely, I believe, who did, or maybe not Frank Quitely. Oh, I'm going to have to look up the same. But the guy who, somebody who worked with Geoff Johns to do Superman Secret Origins and some other things. He draws a really excellent... a really excellent Chris Reeve as Superman. But I don't need every Superman to look like Chris Reeve. I don't need every Superman to feel like Chris Reeve. So the thing about the Avengers game that it's not quote unquote the Avengers we know from Endgame and all that stuff. It doesn't look like them. You know, they didn't get Chris Evans to do Cap's voice, or they didn't get Robert Downey to do Iron Man's voice. I don't care, because honestly, the voice talent alone is amazing. They have Nolan North doing Iron Man, aka your Nathan Drake type. And yes, there's a little Nathan Drakey in it, like the smugness, but that's Tony Stark too, so that's really excellent. And then you have Troy Baker, who's also very popular. I liked him best in Bioshock Infinite. He was the main Booker. I forget his first name, but he was the main guy that you play as. And he's also been in tons of stuff as well. He's the voice of Bruce Banner. And then I'm blanking on some. Oh, I think Laura Bailey, I believe, is the main voice of Widow, who's been in Blood Rain and a bunch of other stuff. And her husband is the voice of Thor. Anyway, so if you look up the voice cast, the main core of it are really great. And the fun experience of the Avengers campaign for me is that you're introduced basically to this world through the character of Kamala Khan, who's become a more and more popular sort of next gen character, much like Spider-Gwen and Miles Morales, of this far more diverse, far more interesting and young, youthful, experienced characters than we're used to from these tired old white dudes like Tony Stark, Thor, and Cap. Anyway, she comes into this story, and you kind of see the world through her eyes. She's a big fangirl of the Avengers and particularly Captain Marvel, which is why she wears so much Captain Marvel things. Or Miss Marvel sometimes in the past has been labeled her before they sort of took the whole Carol Danvers completely took over the Captain portion of things. But anyway, and her voice actor is phenomenal. Her characterization is phenomenal. I would say the story of the game of campaign is really good. I think the voice acting is really good. I think the character models do not get in the way once you just remember that these are characters first, not actors that we've seen 1,000 times in the movies, which can be really hard to shake for people who have only really experienced the Avengers through the movies. Like if you see Chris Evans your entire life as Cap, it's going to be really hard for you to see anybody else. But
the thing that I find hard about the models, it's not that they don't look like the actors. I just find that the models don't look very good from modern video game standards. That's kind of where I'm like, ooh, this is like the hair on Thor is really rough. That doesn't look all that good. Like I have a hard time getting pulled into any of the story trailers that I've seen, because I'm just looking at it like, this looks like a video game from the early aughts. You know, it looks like it's 10 years old.
It might be graphically, I know. So sound graphics, a lot of the mechanical things happening with the Avengers game are actually pretty rough. There's a lot of flaws. They've already come out with a big patch to start it, but they're going to have to keep patching this thing. And it's really going to need some work, I think, for it to be a long-term type of thing, like a Destiny, which is, I think, what their goal is. But for me, I mean, as somebody who's about to have a second child who doesn't spend a ton of time playing the game that just came out, and also who loves Borderlands, which is not exactly graphically the most, you know, it's not like Ghost of.
Borderlands has a very specific style, but I would say that Borderlands seems to know what it is, you know, and kind of
and
own that style. Whereas I feel like, and I wonder if, you know, if Avengers could have benefited from having a more of a cartoony look. Like they feel like they wanted to go more realistic with it, like realistic action game. And I don't know if they, from what I've seen, having not played it because I don't have access, I don't think they really nailed it. I'm trying to think about another game that had that kind of realism that I have played. Now, granted, it's been a long time, but when I played the Batman, like Arkham City, Arkham Origins series, at the time I played them, which was 5 to 6 years ago, I don't remember feeling like, ooh, man, these look really rough. You know, like I just think like, yeah, these are great for, you know, Xbox 360 and I played Origins on the computer, but like, you know, they looked good for what I thought was up to modern standards at the time. You know, whereas when I've seen a bunch of other different games out there, like So one that's really big on Twitch right now is Horizon Zero Dawn got ported to PC. So people are playing it on PC. And I'm looking at that and going like, well, that's a 2 or 3 year old game, but it still looks better than Avengers, you know? So right. that to me is a weird off put. But again, like you said, if the story is good, it doesn't matter because like I watched that Transformers War for Cybertron cartoon on Netflix and the animation and models in that are like phoned in. But the story was good that it really didn't matter. So
yeah.
So I can see how it would pull you in.
The thing is, going in, just cutting to the end, I would say this is gonna be weird. I would say don't buy this game right now. First and foremost, because it's still full price, and two, there's still a lot of work they got to put into quality of life, and also obviously content. I think on the back end needs to really expand, especially if they again want this to be more of an online fun. You play the campaign to get into the world, but then you really are in it to play with your friends and go on quests and that sort of stuff. Not in a full MMO setting, but in a sense of like a, you know, like again, I've never played Destiny, so I don't know how absolutely close it is to that. But that's sort of the gist. So I would say don't get it. But I really enjoy the hell out of this game, as flawed as it is. And this is saying like how the other night for like 5 minutes straight, a sound cue just kept queuing over and over again. And it was Hulk grunting. And it was incredibly annoying until I could get to a next thing where there's a sound cue that stopped it. But that wasn't in the main story. I think there was only one moment in the main story where I had an issue with the background sort of layering behind the characters. So that was disappointing. But the story itself was really good. Most of the reviews, I think when you read, they'll tell you the story is good. I think the voice acting, again, is so good. Is Bruce Banner. Here's the thing. Like, I think we may have talked about this, or maybe I've just had this conversation with you in my head. But sometimes what I don't think people get credit for enough is particularly in voice acting is sometimes the subtleties of voice acting where it's not just saying something. So there's a lot of like breath work, which sounds really gross. Like you think of this person just sitting in a booth, just being like, oh no, like that. Mm-hmm. And you're like, that seems weird. But Troy Baker's breath work as Banner tells volumes to what I love the graphics. I think the graphics are pretty good, but if the graphics are a little iffy for you, the voice acting does so much work for you. And it's really great. I think every single person characterizes their character perfect towards the comics. I even feel like the Thor we get in this game is very much embracing the Thor that's sort of been very touted in the movies, and has been more embraced in the comics more recently, which is, I mean, originally he was pretty brash too, but it's more, far more of like a Chris Hemsworth kind of silly or like very arrogant Thor. But yeah, I think the story itself is really good. I think once this game comes out in price and has had far more support, again, it's not even been out for a month. I'm crossing my fingers that within like, you know, 4 or 5 months, they'll have worked out a lot more of the kinks and it'll have a lot more long-term viability. But for now, I've really, really enjoyed it. I think gameplay-wise, the best I could equate it to is like an Arkham series or Assassin's Creed, or I've been told the new Assassin's Creed's the Origins series, which is a lot more of like wait and counter people and then hit your combos and that sort of stuff is very reminiscent of this gameplay. I'm a terrible person at countering and blocking. I hated it. Like I did not get my combo meter up high in Batman. I used as many gadgets as I could to cowardly destroy people. And I will say in this game, with certain characters, I've actually really enjoyed, trying to figure out the best time to block. Again, there's some quality of life issues with some of the mobbing of bad guys. They will not back off. They will pretty much mob you to death and not let you stand up at times. So there's definitely a lot of issues with it. It's a beautifully flawed. It's to me, it's a very fun, gorgeous flower in a construction zone where I'm very excited to see how the rest of the garden comes together for that flower. And the genesis of what will be there. So we'll see in long term if it's going to be a park or if it's just going to be, well, that was a really nice development. You know, it just never really panned out. So we'll see what it is in the long term. But if you're waiting to see if you should spend the money now, I would say continue to wait. If you already have it and or you and you haven't cracked open the box and you're anxious because you're hearing me, I would say just go ahead and do it. You know, because personally, again, I did digitally too, funny enough, when we talked about it. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to playing it with my friend who also has it once he gets through the storyline. They do at least warn you that if you try and play the almost entirely multiplayer elements of the game, it will spoil storyline elements. So it kind of trying to pushes you towards finishing the campaign first. But yeah, it's not forcing you to play online, by the way. I mean, you have to have an online connection for a lot of the updating stuff, but the characters you build, like for instance, if you build a couple of the Avengers out, and you play as another one of the Avengers, and you don't open yourself up to matchmaking, you'll play with your with CGI versions of the characters you've developed. The CGI on them is not terrible. They've definitely revived me several times when I've died, which is the number one thing I care about an AI to do, which is like, dude, I'm the player character. Come over and help me. And they make pretty good choices. There's been a few moments where I'm like whipping around to go fight more bad guys, and my AI buddies have murdered everything, and I'm like, well, all right, here we go. I don't have to do everything. Like in most games, I feel like the AI characters only do like 10% of the damage you can as a player, which for me is fun sometimes, but in this game I kind of want them to be a little bit stronger and meatier. And so far they've been pretty good, but yeah, I think I give it a work in progress C. Overall as a game, storyline I'd give it an A. I really just enjoy the hell out of the voice acting and the story, like to the point where I might Google if there's a way to like redo the story without like basically erasing your entire game, because it would be fun to redo some of the main story elements in the moment, rather than just watching cutscenes. I mean, the cutscenes are obviously there, but yeah, but they thread a few of the gameplay moments into the storyline as you would with like an Uncharted or that sort of thing. But
what's the price point on it right now?
Right now, it's released at $59.99.
Right, so full price game, and that's
full price.
That,
yeah,
it's been a little while since I've picked up a game like that. Is 14 hours below average, or is that average for like a $60 game?
It's really hard for me to say. I generally gravitate towards JRPGs or RPGs in general, which
right tend like, to be longer.
You know, yeah, tend to be 60-hour games. But I think for a game of, like, for instance, the Uncharted series, which I enjoy those, I think the main storyline of the Uncharted games is usually roughly 9 to 12 hours, and then you can kind of supplement it with like going on. There's not really any side quests in those games, but you can kind of go find collectibles, but and sometimes right. They added multiplayer.
That's
but yeah, I think yeah. Yeah.
That's where I was with the Assassin's Creed Black Flag, is that it had a story, but you also had the ability to like augment your gear and do a couple of side quests here and there. You didn't have to, but if you did them, it just added to the gameplay. So like, I don't know how long the main story is, but I certainly spent a lot longer than 14 or 20 hours in Assassin's Creed Black Flag.
And that it has that ability. I 100% in the story, I'm calling it, you can do the story missions, but they're going to give you side missions that you can kind of go off and do even multiplayer side missions while you're doing the main storyline. So you're not immediately hand tied to just playing by yourself for 14 right. hours. And also there's opportunities even within those to sort of like, there's like a basically a danger room thing where you can practice with the heroes and stuff like that. But I would say, for the price point, probably if they had none of the glitches and had the absolute optimum graphics, a 14-hour game of this price would probably be fine. Based on what I hear from more of a God of War crowd or those types of people, where you know those games weren't necessarily like 20-hour games, but they were so fine-tuned within that hour limit that it really merited that. But I think generally speaking, I would love that the investment in this game really, really expand. But yeah, I think right now you would just save your money for just quality of life fixes. And then, you know, around the holiday season, I'm sure they'll do a price drop, or there'll at least be a sale at Best Buy where they're like, new Avengers game for $35.99 or $34.99. And if at that point, even if you got this game at half off, half off, quote unquote, if you get around $30 or less, even for that 14 hours and with all the glitches and stuff, I feel like that's valuable, especially since, you know, as people are talking about the next gen, and I think Sony dropped it, that they're going to make their new game $69.99 is the base price.
Yeah, there seems to be a price increase across the board depending on what part of the world that you live in. But yeah, it looks like
exactly.
The new next gen games are going to be more expensive. So
yeah, exactly. So, but it's good. I it's been so fun and so interesting to me as somebody who loves and has wanted to play good superhero games. And I like the Arkham games, but again, it was just only so many like dodging and punching the same punches.
They did get repetitive. Yeah. Like, I mean, within the game, they were okay, but I found that from game to game, you're like, well, it changed a little bit, but it's really the same sort of thing, you know, going forward.
The good news about this, without spoiling, I mean, you can see pictures of who's around, but without spoiling more details of the game, each Avenger they give you does feel different. They fight differently. Obviously, Kamala Khan has stretchy power, so her fists get huge and they stretch and they punch, which looks dramatically different than when, you know, Hulk picks up a chunk of ground and is carrying around a giant like wad of rock, or his grab mechanic grabs bad guys and literally just walks around holding a bad guy. And then you can upgrade that to grab two bad guys and you just walk around holding two bad guys and you just smash other bad guys with bad guys in your hands. Like, those mechanics are really fun to see how they've developed. And again, I just hope that a lot more of the bread and butter of the graphic sound and quality of life things, like not sinking through the floor, that occurs not for me, but has occurred for other people online, doesn't occur as much. But yeah, it's a lot of fun. I think it's taken me away from Borderlands 3, and I haven't played the latest DLC. And if it does that, it must be a fun enough game, as nice. Anybody who knows me would tell you. But yeah, it's been good. And I think for that, it really hit when we were talking about the Avengers movies and Endgame last time. And it drove me towards trying to reabsorb a lot more Avengers stuff that I've enjoyed over the past. And one in particular I just want to shout out is the Ultimates, which is basically the Ultimates ill-fated comic universe that spawned Ultimate Spider-Man, which in my opinion rebooted Spider-Man and made Spider-Man a great character for the future, and also gave Brian Michael Bendis the opportunity to eventually help co-create Miles Morales. And then they did Ultimate X-Men, and the Ultimates was that universe's Avengers. It was written and created by Mark Millar and Brian Hitch, who did the art. And there's only two volumes of it. If you've never read it, it came before the new MCU. So there are direct things that the new MCU basically took, which was Nick Fury looks like Samuel L. Jackson. There's a joke in one of the issues saying, Nick, who would play you? And he says, duh, Samuel L. Jackson.
Right.
And who did they get? They got Samuel L. Jackson. Like, if you're aware of the Ultimates comics, there's a lot of stuff the MCU took. When I was rereading this, I didn't realize how very adult the Ultimates was. It's quite adult, like not in the sense of like you're seeing a bunch of like naked stuff. I mean, there's some side art, like Giant Man, when he gets big, he's like strategically covering himself, but like he's naked. And then, you know, Wasp, when she shrinks, is sometimes like side shot naked. But like the content of what they're discussing, the depressions, the anger of a lot of these characters, it's all there. And I think if you have loved the MCU, but at times you've been like, man, everybody's so jokey and man, everybody feels so same at times. The Ultimates is a great like comic run of two volumes where you're going to get a lot of the similarities of the Tony Stark you see from the movies, but at the same time, you know, a little bit of a darker edge to it. Particularly a darker edge to Bruce and Hulk. And then Cap is far more of a stick in the mud and sort of a lot more of a man out of time than even the movies give him. But that's a really great series. Again, it's probably not one that you want to hand over to like a 10-year-old or younger. It's probably a pretty solid, maybe like 13 or older type of thing. But no swearing, no actual sex. But, you know, the violence is there and some of the issues and topics that are brought up can get a little bit intense.
Yeah, like adult problems, I think is one way to put it. Yeah,
no,
Yeah, I've seen that in some books and some superhero stuff where you just can like, this is really cool, but it's like, you want to be careful who you give it to. I definitely had that happen before. For me, I have been watching a fair bit of Netflix, actually, and I finished Wizards Tales of Arcadia, which I had only just started last week. I was just in the mood for some animation, and I enjoyed the series premiere, the first episode of the series, and decided to stick with it. And Brock, have you watched this?
I've watched all of Trollhunters, and I watched one season of
Three Below. Okay. So I had to muscle through the next season of Three Below. It wasn't easy. It was worth it in the end, but it was a bit of a slog. And thankfully, Wizards, Tales of Arcadia, which I would say doesn't hinge much on Three Below outside of like the last 2 to 3 minutes of Three Below, Wizards just kind of is its own thing. It's much closerly. Wow, that's not even a word. It's much more closely tied to Trollhunters than it is Three Below. So I won't, well, I can't get into this without too many spoilers. So, so just kind of a word of warning for those listening. I finished the series over the weekend. It was very watchable. I think I ended up going through 10 episodes in 4 to 5 days. It was kind of like a lunchtime and then dinner time, maybe another one, kind of like that sort of a thing. The pros compared to other seasons and of this Tales of Arcadia series is that they keep the pace up most of the time. Right in the first episode, you've got this air battle between Flying Camelot, which is like a floating castle powered by time, and the Arcane Order, and the accident that sends 3 or 4 of your main characters back in time. And so they're back in like medieval times. You've got Lancelot, and you've got King Arthur, and Galahad, and all these different characters. And so it really does kind of like up the pace quite a bit, because there's always something going on. And as it turns out, they're back in time around the time of the Battle of Killahead Bridge, which is a big historical reference point for Trollhunters. It's where the first Trollhunter established and used the Merlin's amulet to trap the evil trolls, the Gum-Gums, I think is what they're called. It's a stupid name. in another dimension, in the Darklands. And they used the Killahead Bridge, which in this show is an actual stone bridge. They used it and turned it into a portal. In this series, when you show up back in time, Merlin is there and he's still making the amulet. It's his plan to end the war between humans and trolls, is to create this amulet and give trolls the power to weed out their own bad guys, basically. Because what's happening essentially is that trolls are both good and evil. There are, just like humans, there are basically dickheads, you know, in every walk of life.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, but the bad trolls are giving all trolls a bad name. And King Arthur is basically sending out these big mandates to say, like, all trolls are to be killed on sight and destroy them and get them out of the kingdom and ban all magic. All magic is evil. And he's just black and white about everything all the time.
Yeah.
It is, that kind of stuff is really annoying, because there are lots of characters in this that are one note, and it does drive you a little bit crazy. The main character, though, is Hizzardukes, who is Merlin's apprentice. And he's shown up in a couple of other series as one of the waiters at the cafe in Arcadia. And he's voiced by, he played Hook in Once Upon a Time, Colin Donahue.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. I mean, the voice, talking about good voice acting, the voice acting in Wizards is fantastic. I mean, you've got some of the same people that we've always, you know, enjoyed. Emil Hirsch takes over the voice of Jim. You've got Lexi Medrano voicing Claire. You've got Kelsey Grammer voicing Blinky. Like, just really kind of like some stuff that you're all used to. But then you've got David Bradley is Merlin. He was the, I can't remember the character's name, but he was the janitor in Harry Potter. I can't remember the guy's name.
Filch.
Filch. So he played Filch in Harry Potter. You've got Alfred Molina is Archie, who is the familiar to Hizzarduke. So Hizzarduke has like a little cat slash dragon shape-shifting companion. And it's a talking cat with glasses. And even though he insists he's not a cat most of the time, it's Alfred Molina. So it's got a great kind of like very wonderful paced delivery. There's also gems like John Rhys-Davies as Galahad. Like just,
yeah,
it's not a huge part, but like anytime Galahad's on screen, it is just unmistakable who's speaking, right?
Yeah.
So that kind of stuff was really, really fun. Unfortunately, Hizzardukes ends up with an unexplained nickname for the first half of the series. They call him Dukesy, which doesn't make any sense. And it's not until the latter half of the season when most of the dialogue is happening between Merlin and Hizzardukes, because Merlin doesn't use the nickname. It's only the kids that use the nickname. And it's much better, because what happens is that the rest of the characters start calling him Hizzardukes as well. And it's just a cool historical name. Like, it's just a unique name that I've never heard before. And the Dukesy thing just felt very modern. And that's one thing that I think the series struggles with. And I'll get to that in a little bit. The other thing that I think was a really good point for the series is the villains. It's not just one bad guy. Like previously it was like, I can't remember his name, Gunmar, or it was,
the big bad.
What was her name? Morgana. Morgana was in like season three. Like there's always the one evil, you know, Skeletor is essentially right. But in this, it's the Arcane Order. And the Arcane Order is this combination of magical beings, Nari, Skrail, and Belrock. And not only are they really unique kind of ideas, they're also really unique character designs. Skrail is like this ice magic death, kind of like everything's cold and Lich King like, but he's got this weird kind of like cloak with a big sigh, and he's got these weird horns. Very kind of like, almost reminded me of like a cartoon version of the Grudge, like that horror kind of like movie with like pale children. Like it's really, really interesting sort of stuff. Nari is probably the least original, but she's still really appealing as a character. She's essentially like a nature magic nymph, you know, as you would expect in any kind of like fantasy lore. She's got like leaves for armor, and she's got antlers, and she's very sweet and very sensitive and can kind of like sense and nurture things and whatnot. And then there's Belrock, who is mostly fire and brimstone, doom and evil, all wrapped up into one. And I say that both literally and figuratively, because they portray Belrock as an androgynous character. So both male and female, and both male and female voice acting happening at the same time. It's creepy, and it works really well. Like you'll have this like soft delivery from a female voice actor, but then you'll have the exact same line being delivered at the same time with this deep booming voice from a man, and combined with like whatever effects they do to it to make it echo and sound like they're a wizard, you know, it really has this strange kind of like rumble to it. It's almost like, it's like if a child kind of turned to you and spoke with Darth Vader's, you know, kind of like digital mask voice with James Earl Jones at the same time, right? It has this weird echo to it. Really interesting character designs as well. Their power seems to be something to do with their eyes, and at one point they're injured and they have to wear a blindfold, and then they have armor, and there's eyes in the armor in the shoulders. Now they're not like real eyeballs, they're like gems or rocks or stones, but they still look around. So
yeah,
the character's head is looking one way, that the eyeballs will then shift before the head will move. Like it's really got this kind of like backwards kind of feature to it. So the Arcane Order actually portrays this really interesting dynamic of like this, not just one big bad, there's three, which, and so Nari kind of defects to the good guys, and so they replace Nari with the Green Knight, which is essentially like a Darth Vader character, this really powerful armored figure. And they have this advantage of like, there's three of them. So they can be in three places at once, which is basically kicking the good guys' butt for the first eight episodes. Like it's really creates this interesting dynamic there, which I thought was really cool. I loved the way that they twist a few things, like having Camelot being a flying castle. The Lady of the Lake in the Camelot myth, it's not a lady at all. It's like this, it's basically like a Cthulhu monster. And the lady is like the angler thing from an angler fish. So you
yeah, that lures you in.
Yeah. And then she comes out of the water and it's just like all teeth and tentacles and all kinds of craziness. Like, so there are some really interesting things to it. And I think it does well to not do 13 episodes. It's only 10 episodes. And they eliminate those filler episodes that you would expect to get. Because again, you're so familiar with this world now at this point, they don't need to do that.
Yeah.
Which is really cool. The stuff that pulled me out of it, though, was kind of hard to get past. And some of it, sure, it's just not written for me. It's meant for younger kids. But Steve Palchuk, who is like the comic relief for these things, he's in it.
Bully turned comic relief.
Yeah. Like
I've never been a fan of the character that is such a jerkwad for so much of the thing and then is redeemed into a hero, even.
Like, yeah.
He was always problematic for me to begin with. And yeah, I can understand what you're
saying. Well, the writing for him is this week. Like, he's supposed to be the comic relief. He's unbelievably dumb, even for a cartoon character. And they repeat everything. Like, all he does is just, here's a very basic situation that he just cannot grasp. Or something where he's expected to be brave and he thinks he's going to be brave and he talks and talks and talks about how brave he's going to be. And he just runs away screaming like a girl over and over, like every episode it happens. And he's like, why are you wasting my time? It's not even worth putting on screen. He brings nothing interesting to it. It's also loud and obnoxious. Like, it's not even like they're writing jokes. He's just screaming. That's all he's doing. It's not funny. And so that really pulls me out of the whole thing. Because you have this opportunity of being back in time in like ancient, I mean, I think they said it was like 1100s or 1200s or something like that. They do put like a timeline on it roughly. Hizzardukes does actually when he's explaining things, but he does it so quickly that I don't remember. But like, you want more of that world. You want to understand more of that world. So like, why are you wasting my time with this modern teenager that doesn't understand why his cell phone doesn't work after he went through a time portal? Like, it's just really kind of annoying. They also unfortunately dropped the ball with Merlin. He's really interesting the first couple of episodes, but after that, Merlin just becomes this constant, stubborn old man that will not listen to the kids. And the kids are constantly going on adventures and constantly working towards solving the problem and finding new information. And every time they have new information, they have a new idea. And Merlin always says, that's dumb. You're a child. Let's do it this way. And every time they do that, it doesn't work. And it's just like, oh God, like, when is this guy going to clue in? He's supposed to be this wise wizard. And he's constantly just dismissing all of these valid ideas that the kids have, and you get frustrated as a viewer because you know you were there watching the cartoon and you know they're right. And it'd be one thing if it happened in the arc of an episode, but he never learns from it. He's always wrong and he's always stubborn about it, and he's like, but you're not progressing as a character. And then later on they try to portray him as this emotional father figure to Hizzardukes, because Hizzardukes is his apprentice. And you get no love between Merlin and Hizzardukes when you see the old Hizzardukes in time. And you get no love between the modern Hizzardukes and Merlin because it's just more the same. He's just bossing him around, telling him he's wrong. There's no softness there ever. And then when things get really dire and you're supposed to be emotional about this relationship, there's nothing to base it on. They just start the voice acting gets soft and there's all these emotional scenes and you're just like, well, I'm supposed to be feeling this here simply because the script is telling me to, not because you've earned it. And that is unfortunate. And they do that in other places too. Callista is a troll, and she is forgettable, and she's supposed to be this like really important role in the whole season of like she's the first troll hunter. She is the one that's she befriends Jim, who's back in time, and so it's supposed to be this really cool moment with Jim, our troll hunter, meeting the first troll hunter, the first person that the amulet chose. And it's a combination of really poor character design, despite the fact that I know what they were trying to do with making a more diverse hero. And the voice acting is like lackluster. Like it's really kind of bland. It's the kind of thing where like it would work if you were in a CBS crime drama, but like you're a troll and you're a hero, like put something into it. And she's,
yeah,
there's something also with like so many characters. When you go back in time to this ancient land, everybody's got either a Scottish or an English accent, except for this one troll who talks like she's from Jersey.
Yeah.
You know, even an American accent, the few American accents that are in there, you've got Arg, who barely speaks. He speaks like Hulk-ese. So like, he already has a unique thing. And Kelsey Grammer, who granted he isn't English, he just sounds, you know,
he just sounds proper.
Proper.
Yeah, and a little stuffy.
And, you know, and that's the thing is that on top of Calista having some weak voice acting, the writing is also slow. It's just like, well, why is she using contractions and hip language when she's supposed to be from ancient Camelot? You know, like it just doesn't make any sense. So there's things like that that don't really tie it all together.
I didn't love the fact of like having in the first series there was or Troll Hunters. I didn't love some of the choices made at the end of that series in general. I guess not spoiling those things, but one of the main characters goes through a pretty an important transformation. I didn't love the justification for it at all. In fact, the way the episode was presented, it almost felt like a bad thing, and I never loved that. And that was a choice that took me out of it. I never loved when Merlin showed up to begin with. I agree with you. I think some of the subterfuge of this classic character of Merlin, who you assume would always know right and doesn't, is good. It just needs to be portrayed better. And obviously some of these stories have been around so long, like, you know, are you going to tell the same Peter Pan story? You're going to tell the same King Arthur story? You're going to tell the same, you know, like people want to put different twists or buttons on these different things. But by the end of Troll Hunters, that the three seasons, I was like, all right, I'm good. I'm ready to be done with this. I also didn't love some of the things you did. And then Three Below, the first season was okay. I did not progress through the second. Like you said, it felt like a slog. And I just told myself, I've just watched too many things for that to be the case. And so I just didn't get further. And to hear that doesn't really tie into this is even more frustrating, because I think the way this was all marketed was like Tales of Arcadia is going to be this shared universe and everything will kind of culminate. But it sounds like really what you do is you watch Three Below just to have a little touch of sci-fi with Steve Paulchuk, if you like him, I guess, is a really main character. And then other than that, you really only needed to watch Troll Hunters. When it said, boom, Wizards is out, I was like, oh, I should go back and watch Three Below. And I was like, no, like, there's too much stuff going on. You only have so much time. I don't want to force myself to watch Three Below just to connect. And now that I hear that I don't, it makes me feel any better. But even still, like,
you could watch the last two episodes of Three Below and get all caught up. Like, the problem with Three Below is that the last two episodes, they're really well paced and they get the job done, but they also kind of reiterate rehash what you've already known all season. So you could have just had a Three Below as like a two episode like intro into Wizards, as opposed to a whole season. And you're right in that, like, I give them some points for doing some things differently, like how a wizard gets his power and how it's tied to their staff, and how Merlin's, he's in like armor and he doesn't look like Gandalf, right? Like he's got a very unique look to it. But the issue is that like they don't give you enough reasons for it. Like, you really want to know how the magic in Wizards work and like how magic came to be. And they just kind of like give you the whole magic is just magic. And there's these seals, and this has become like the new the crutch of the season, or the big thing that they have to do, is keep the seals away from the Arcane Order. What the hell are the seals? How are these the most important magical artifact known to man, and they've never been mentioned until the last two episodes of these now six seasons of content? Like, it really feels ham-fisted, which is unfortunate. The other thing that I liked Hizzard Dukes as a main character. He's a good dude. He's a good voice. Like, the voice acting is great from Colin Donoghue. He's a good emotional character. He's not perfect, and I like that about him. But then they bring me out of it when, like, his staff manifests its power as an electric guitar. And you're trying to remind yourself, why is he playing an electric guitar? Oh, right. Because in the first episode, he was playing a lute back in, like, ancient Camelot, and he was trying to work on his music. And so he's this, like, emo cafe barista that, like, his staff has a guitar. Cue as many jokes as they can about Camelot people hating rock and roll. Like, it's not even rock and roll. Yeah. It's like heavy metal riffs. It's like, it screams like Back to the Future, like, without any good reason to be. And it doesn't really work, because it pulls me out of it. Like, it reminds me, like, oh, right, I'm watching a cartoon written by people that think they know what people want. Like, it didn't really work out that way. You don't get the answers that you want. You get some lovable characters. I really like Nari. And so it's like they do set this up in a way that there's going to be another season, I think, because the thing now is to protect Nari, keep Nari away from the Arcane Order, because she defected and the Arcane Order is trying to get her back. She's part of this, like, trifecta. Like, they're only powerful when the three of them are together, but the problem is that one of them grew a conscience and now she's a good guy, and so they're trying to get her back. So that's kind of neat in terms of, like, okay, it's not just a good versus evil, it's that one of the bad guys actually has turned good and the bad guys are trying to get her back. And so one of the last shots, which is not really a spoiler, but, like, it's Nari and Hizzard Dukes and Archie, who's the cat dragon, they're all in New York City. So it looks like we might get, like, a change of scenery. So we might be seeing Wizards season two might be, like, set in a big city as opposed to Arcadia, which might mean we get less Palchuk, less Toby, all that kind of stuff. So we'll see how it goes. I mean, I'd be curious to watch.
They shoehorn Toby and Palchuk into everything. Single season of this, and it's to the point where I was like, Toby was charming at first, and now he's annoying. Mm-hmm. Palchuk was bearable, now he's unbearable.
Yep.
Like, it has all the mechanics. I mean, at the end of the day, I just have to remember that it's they still have to really cater to a core general audience, and of course, like with anything that you watch that has a broader audience, like, there's just certain episodes of Clone Wars that were never for me, there's just certain episodes of this that are never going to be for me. So I have to realize, I mean, my daughter thinks it's funny when, you know, she's only two, but she thinks it's funny when a character is, like, screaming wildly. So maybe Steve Polichuk is exactly her wheelhouse and not for me, so I have to remember that. But at the same time, part of me is like, well, you know, if I'm that, you know, if there's other things out there that are built more for me, why would I quote unquote, like, force myself to do the homework of watching something like this versus something else?
It's so, a really good comparison to talk about, like, your daughter being, you know, finding that kind of stuff hilarious. Steve Palchuk is a teenager. He's supposed to be in high school. You know, like, it's one thing if there's a small kid running around and screaming and doing funny things. Really good example is the kid from Despicable Me that finds the unicorn fluffy. Like, that kind of stuff is hilarious, but it's hilarious because she's five and it makes sense, you know, whereas Palchuk, it just doesn't. Even if, I mean, yes, we're dealing with a world that has magic and trolls and flying castles, but, like, just nothing that he does made any sense whatsoever. There's lots of stuff that I find is lacking there. On the bright side, to end this on a positive note, I really did enjoy the character arcs for Morgana and for Claire. It actually was thoughtful. Claire is not just a damsel in distress. Like, she's a shadow magic weaver and learning these things, and she's got her own armor. The armor is a little bit dumb, but because it just looks so much like all the other armor. I wish that Claire had more unique things for her. But I feel like there was more going on there emotionally, and especially in their relationship, because the complicated thing there is that Morgana like possessed Claire, I think, in like season two or three of Trollhunters. But she's she's not dealing with that Morgana. They go back in time. This is the Morgana that's never met them. Right. So Claire's like trying to deal with like letting go of how she feels about this future villain. And so it's more complicated than the show usually gives you. So that part was cool. And I like the way that they portrayed some of the female protagonists in the series. They're usually pretty strong female characters, which is cool.
So that is good.
Yeah, I'm happy for that. And again, I love the villains. The villains were really kind of stealing the show for me. But that's going to bring us into the Internet Minute, which is the part of the show where I thank you, the patron, the people that help make the show possible. The Citadel Cafe is 100% listener supported. If you're getting value out of the show, please consider putting a little bit of value back in. You can become a member at patreon.com/thecitadelcafe. We're joining at any level. We'll get you an invite to the member-only Discord server where we talk about nerdy stuff all week long, as well as the bonus episodes that we have going on. We have a very exciting thing to share this week. The Mandalorian Season 2 trailer dropped yesterday. Have you had a chance to watch this, Brockett?
I made it a point not to.
Okay. So I did it because I always complain that these trailers drop the moment that I stop recording the episode. It's like they come out Wednesday afternoons. So thankfully, this one came out a little bit earlier. I can say there's no spoilers. Because I was worried about that too. I watched it. I took the hit thinking like, well, if it's going to spoil a little bit of the season, then I'd rather know than not know and be able to talk about the show. I think that if you're worried about spoilers for Mandalorian season two, you should watch the trailer because there's no new information in terms of like, I feel like the story. The voiceover for the trailer is the armorer from season one.
Oh, nice.
Giving him his mission in the last episode. So she's just kind of like re-speaking the lines of like, who is the child that has caused so much destruction? You should find the child's, you know, people. Like just basically like setting the tone for like, this is the new mission for the new season. That's all the dialogue and information you get. There's some cool aliens and there's some cool shots and stuff like that. Some Star Wars-y things. Lots of talk about evil space wizards. Which I thought was kind of funny because, of course, Mandalore views the Jedi as very different than most of us do.
Nice.
Which I thought was funny.
He calls them wizards?
Yeah. The whole explanation is like, so there's like the ancient Mandalore has talk of dealings with special beings of power and blah, 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 blah. And he kind of like muscles through it like, so you want me to take the kid to evil space wizards? Like some really fun stuff like that. And also some really cool Star Wars shots for people that are fans of the greater, you know, universe with like X-Wings and TIE Fighters and stuff like that. I mean, it could be in the show for minutes. I don't know. But it does kind of like hit those notes of like, it's going to go forward. It's going to have a sense of humor. It's going to tie into the larger Star Wars universe. You're going to get all the things that I think that you wanted and got from season one. Season two looks like it's going to be pretty on the nose. So I am excited for it. But again, doesn't like reveal or spoil anything. It's not like it's a bunch of jokes or scenes from the upcoming season. I think it's got like one or two brief scenes and the rest of it is just like, you know, inconsequential action shots, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's good.
Well, that wraps up this episode of The Citadel Cafe. You can get more info about the show and links to some of the things that we talked about at thecitadelcafe.com. Music for the show was composed by Kevin McLeod, and you can email us at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com or find us on Twitter. You can subscribe for free on iTunes, Android, Stitcher, and Spotify. We're also on YouTube, and word of mouth is the easiest way to support the show. Just tell friends about The Citadel Cafe and where they can go to listen to it. My name is Joel Duggan. You can find everything I am doing online, including my illustration and design portfolio at joelduggan.com. You can listen to my other podcast all about Minecraft at thesponchunks.com. And of course, you can follow me at Joel Duggan on social media. Today, I'll point you towards twitch.tv/joelduggan, where I have been enjoying modded Minecraft and looking forward to playing some new things there as well. Brockett, where can people find you online?
You can just look up The Cat Volver on most social media and you can find me there, unless you want to try and join me in the Avengers Initiative or future Borderlands excursions. Then it's just Cat Volver is the gamer tag.
You've been listening to The Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, easy, and cheap, but you can only pick two.